The concern about drug abuse, the main concern in drug abuse, seems to shift all the time. Remember when cocaine was the big concern, or the crack epidemic, followed closely by the meth epidemic? In recent years, the prime concern has been the abuse of prescription painkillers in the opioid group, OxyContin by brand name, and similar drugs. Since these are legal prescription drugs, the people who prescribe them can and do take a hand in curbing their abuse. An opioid prescribers group, OPG, operates in the Rogue Valley, and it involves a number of different kinds of healthcare providers, including our guest today. Joshua Grainer is an acupuncturist and integrative medical director for Colpia Counseling Services, based in Ashland and Medford. Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So tell us what you do and how you come in contact with opioid users.
Okay, so I'm primarily an acupuncturist, a Chinese medical practitioner. And a little while ago, I was approached to head up a program where we use integrative medicine along with traditional drug counseling, mental health counseling, to help this problem, because it's a very multifaceted problem, a very complex problem. And when to bring everybody up to speed, when I say integrative medicine, there's a lot of things come to mind. But it's primarily a philosophy. It's an idea of meeting the patient where they're at, using what modalities and therapies are available in their area, and combining things which are very low impact with also traditional therapies. So in this case, we use a combination of acupuncture, Chinese medicine, nutrition therapy, along with yoga therapy, mindfulness-based meditation, mobility, and along with traditional drug counseling, mental health counseling, and also Suboxone tapering programs.
So, Joshua, what are the usual circumstances in which somebody begins using opioids, OxyContin, and the like?
So, yeah, this is a very interesting and difficult question. I'd like to get to some historical perspectives in a moment, but primarily, it's pain, and pain is something that affects everybody along every course of their life, every socioeconomic demographic. So, it's you know, somebody, they trip, they fall, they get in a car accident, they have a surgery, and the provider puts them on these high-powered semi-synthetic opiates, and they take these for a certain period of time. Now, the difficult thing is everybody responds to them in a different way. So a lot of folks, they take it, they do their 10-day course, whatever, and they're off and everything's good. For some folks, it's a completely different situation. So if it's okay, I'd like to get into a bit of a historical
background. Feel free.
Background.
Yeah. Because opioids and opiates are not necessarily the exact same thing, right? Opioids are synthetic opiates.
Okay. So, yeah. So opioid means something that is opiate-like, right? So it's something that resembles opium or the chemical makeup of opium in one way or the other. So it's something that's opium-like. The opiate and opioid are often used interchangeably. So the issue with opiates in general have dated back as far back as about 300 BC, and it was actually something that was used by Alexander the Great. You know, being the great military strategist, he decided to, once he discovered opium, he thought, oh man, this would be a great way to take over countries, to take over entire regions. So he would introduce, not only as a way to derive financial gain and to continue to fund his efforts, but also to take over a region. He would literally sedate people throughout Persia and India, and then it worked its way into China.
Wow, so much less military hardware needed and troops on the ground if you
right.
can manage to sedate the population.
Yeah, exactly. And it worked its way into China, and China having a very vast and rich and deep medical heritage, 5,000 years, the Chinese medical doctors of the time, about 2,500 years ago, they said, "Hey, you know, this is really an inferior medicinal." In fact, they called it the barbaric medicinal. That's actually what the name, what opium was, as a medicinal, and within Chinese medicine, it was a barbaric medicinal, because there was no way to really counteract the effects. That they couldn't derive a positive effect from it, with the exception of its pain killing, without it having a far lasting, far reaching negative effects. So at the time, over about 500 years. It really kind of seeped its way out of China, and then the British brought it back into China, trying to use some of the same strategies as Alexander the Great, trying to sedate China and
the opium wars of the 19th century.
The opium wars of the 19th century, that which is what it resulted. So this happened over the course of about 400 years, with different types of trade going into China, both from the Dutch and also from the English. And China, multiple times, emperor saying, absolutely not, we cannot have this drug unregulated throughout our country. And then finally the British were like, you know what, well, we're going to start a war over this. And that's what happens. They ended up battling. And that's how Hong Kong came into to British hands. So the ironic thing about all this is that if you're to look into British history around the same time, in England, it was illegal to use opium on the streets unless you were card-carrying Chinese or Indian.
Really?
Which is really strange, yeah.
So let the minorities use it, but not the mainstream folks.
Exactly. So
Joshua Grainer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're getting a little history of opiates. We're on our way to talking about opioid education and how to get people off of the opioid painkillers like OxyContin. He's an acupuncturist and integrative medical director for Colpia Counseling Services. You can join us as we talk about opioids and their abuse and getting people away from that abuse. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So do people build up tolerances to the opioids? Is that one of the major issues with them?
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the biggest issues. And it's not just a matter of tolerance. The person's physiology actually changes. So just to return a tiny bit to the historical aspect, at a certain point, people realize, oh, this is a big problem. Okay, so we need to refine this. So let's create morphine. Morphine is going to be it's going to be the savior for the people that are addicted to opium. And not only that, it has pain-killing effects. Well, they realize after a while, and especially in Europe and also the United States, well, this isn't really actually the case. This is actually a problem. So we need to create something else. Well, let's create heroin. So they went back. They created heroin, and heroin was actually, they thought, to be the heroin. In fact, in the early 1900s in the United States, it was actually handed out for free to people who were hooked on opium and morphine, right? And then fast forward into now present times, then we've got synthetic opiates, things like methadone, and also being handed out for free. And people think, oh, yeah, this is the next biggest, best, and greatest opiate situation. And then we've got, you know, medically prescribed painkillers, things like hydrocodone and oxycodone, which are also, these are considered semi-synthetic opioids. And people are saying, wow, this is the next best, greatest thing. And this is really where the problem has come to. And the situation was about 10, 15 years ago, through a variety of different medical sources, it was said that this classification of semi-synthetic opioids such as hydrocodone and oxycodone were actually not habit-forming, and it was actually the job of the medical provider to provide compassionate care for their patients. And this is really where it came in. So,
not habit-forming was the belief.
Not habit-forming, yeah. This is something that had a very, very low likelihood of forming addiction.
But in fact, it does, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, sir, I've got some stats. So in the U.S., the United States accounts for less than 5% of the population of the world, but we use 80% of the opiate pain medication in the entire world. So sit with that stat for a second. Less than 5% of the population using over 80% of the opiates produced, pain medication used throughout the world. 80%.
Well, we can't be in that much pain, can we?
Well, that's the ironic thing is that long-term use actually increases pain.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the fact that you're building up a tolerance to the drug?
Yeah, exactly. So another quick stat is something that hits a little closer to home. Here in Jackson County, there's about 205,000 people here in Jackson County. But in 2012, there were 450,000 prescriptions for opiate medications filled in 2012.
In so Jackson County alone?
In Jackson County alone.
450,000 prescriptions for
opioids. Yeah, so it's twice as many prescriptions filled for every person here in Jackson County. Now, I know in 2012 I didn't take any prescription opiates. Maybe you didn't. So
no.
Yeah, so it means that there's a big problem. There's a big issue.
All right, we're talking to Joshua Grainer again on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us as we talk about opiates and opioids and how the attempt to regulate them is taking place in the Rogue Valley with a lot of different medical practitioners. He is an acupuncturist. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So when did the OPG start, which was called the Opioid Prescriber Group, and I understand just changed its name?
Yeah, now it's called the Oregon Pain Guidance Group. And one of the main reasons for that, and we'll get into this in just a little bit, is that one of their main things that they wanted to change, that the Opiate Prescriber Group wanted to change, was the prescription guidelines and the prescription practices of providers. Because if you're looking at just that previous stat that I showed where twice as many prescriptions for every person in Jackson County were given, they thought, okay, well, the first place we need to start is with the providers. We need to educate the providers, let them know that the information that has been given to them was misinformation. It was not good information, that this obviously is a habit-forming drug or classification of drugs, and it's creating big issues for people, not just in Jackson County, but all over the United States, all over the world. But Jackson County is one of the top states for accidental overdoses and addiction in the world, or in the United States.
One of the top counties in the United
States. One of the
top counties,
yeah.
Okay. So they must have been asking for bigger prescriptions over time. Is that what happened? Or just more frequent prescriptions? How did this...
Both, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's and what happens is you can think about it like this. Imagine that you have an individual who opens their doors, opens their house to a guest or to a group of guests, and they stay there for a certain period of time. The hangouts, everything is great, and then they say, "Okay, it's time for you guys to go," and they come home from work one day and they change the locks. You can't get into your house, and that's essentially what, for a large majority of people, this is what happens to their physiology. So, in order to understand what's going on, there are receptors throughout the brain, throughout the spinal column, and within the digestive tract, and within the brain. It's in places like the thalamus, the hypothalamus, the periaqueductal gray, a lot of these different structures that regulate every aspect of the person's physiology, the endocrine system, the release of hormones, every aspect of the human experience from a hormonal point of view. They have these receptors, the opiate receptors. Now imagine that the body is washed with this synthetic or semi-synthetic endogenous opioid from an external point of view, from an external source, and it in time actually changes the chemical and physical structure of those receptors. So those receptors will no longer respond to the person's own endogenous.
What's there naturally. So
exactly.
How do you make the shift then to get from this great dependence on this drug to back to a more natural system, particularly when if you're talking about all the different modalities that can come into play, acupuncture among them, which you practice, somebody's saying, just give me drugs. I need drugs. I mean, how do you even get to the mindset where they'll begin to accept the care you want to give?
Yeah, that's really where the difficulty is, because it's an individual situation. You know, when we think about things from a medical point of view, a lot of times we think about it from a combat point of view. We're going to fight AIDS. We're going to fight cancer. We're going to fight drug addiction. But that doesn't really work, because drug addiction isn't necessarily a disease that a person has accumulated. They haven't acquired it. It's actually a situation going on within their personality, within their mind, within their physiology. And to try to attack the disease is to try to attack the person.
Well, yeah, I'll have to tell you that you know, even journalists get used to doing this, because you want to start writing the battle against drugs, the war on drugs. You're trying to figure out a word that doesn't involve some concept of fight, just to describe the very effort that you're engaged in. Let's take some phone calls here. Here's Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about opioid addictions and recovering from them with Joshua Grainer.
Yeah. And sort of look at other approaches to dealing with this problem. For example, in Britain, for decades, heroin users have been given a shot of heroin under medical supervision. They nod out for half an hour or whatever, get up and go about their business for the rest of the day. And, they're not ripping off their fellow citizens to support their habit. They're, you know, escaping a lot of problems that our approach to this subject just compounds.
So something like licensing drug users is pretty much what they've gotten to in England. Thanks for that, Steve. Let's get a response from Joshua about approaches here.
Yeah, so something like this is taking place already in methadone clinics and also to some extent in maintenance Suboxone programs. These things already exist. The thing is not just a matter of getting people off the streets, because it's a misnomer. It's a misconception that opiate addiction only affects some person who's a junkie on the street laid out. No, this is not the case. This is the people that we see coming through our clinics. These are doctors. These are lawyers. These are community leaders. These are people, mothers, fathers. These are people who have for some reason been exposed to this chemical. Their physiology has been changed, switched, and now they're struggling with this. And they, for the most part, they keep it in secret, which is one of the big reasons why I'm on the air today is I want to make sure that people know that it doesn't have to remain a secret, that it doesn't have to. There's a lot of support that's out there, especially with the work of organizations like the Oregon Pain Guidance, previously known as the Opiate Prescriber Group. There's a lot of support, and it's growing every day. Every day there's more people, organizations becoming aware of it, and people stepping up to the plate and trying to address this problem.
So if people hear this and they think, well, this sounds like me, mm-hmm. where do they go for help? What's the first step?
The first step is to talk to the primary care provider, talk to, especially if it's being prescribed, and saying, hey, doc, you know, I really think I've got an issue with this. And sit down with the provider, sit down with the primary care provider and say, you know, how can we fix this? How can we address this? And then to reach out to the community, the community of being the opiate prescription community. So they can get information directly on our website for different resources throughout the entire community. But they can also you can also Google opiate prescriber group or Oregon Pain Guidance, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of resources there as well.
And what is the actual website?
The actual website is kolpiacounseling.com.
Okay, Kolpia Counseling.
And that's for us. Mm-hmm. And the URL for the Oregon Pain Guidance is really, really long.
Okay. Well, we have it linked on our website and our Facebook page. Let's take another call. Here's Gene in Winston. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about kicking painkillers with Joshua Grainer.
Yes, hi. Well, maybe mine isn't on, my comment is not on kicking painkillers, but not getting them in the first place. I realize that pain tolerance is a very individual matter, but for myself, I broke my left hip June the 9th and opted not to have surgery, and was told I had to stay in bed for 8 weeks. Well, I didn't do that. I'm driving and using a cane now. But I was prescribed a combination of, I think, hydrocodone and acetaminophen. I did not take any of that because I think pain has a purpose. I thought, well, if I blank out the pain, I won't get the feedback. I was afraid I might get careless, you know, if I didn't have that pain feedback. And so I used my method of pain management, which was to shriek in agony for the first couple of weeks, but now I have very little pain. And so anyway, that's what I wanted to say, that I think, you know, some pain has a purpose. If we can stand it, it's better to get that feedback from the pain.
Gene, did you even take any of the acetaminophen?
No, I didn't take any.
Nothing
of
at all. Wow, you really toughed it out. Well,
yeah, I did. I did tough it out, but it got better after the first 13 days. I didn't have to scream anymore when I lifted my leg up onto the couch where I had to sleep. And anyway, that's just what I wanted to say.
All right, thank you for that story, Gene. Appreciate it, good on you, I guess, for getting through it. But this is not something I would think you'd recommend for everybody, would you, Joshua Grainer? It's very individual sort of pain management plans.
Yeah, exactly, and you know that. But she does bring up a very good point, and it's that pain is a normal part of life, and there definitely is. And I know this is getting kind of on a controversial topic, but there definitely is, especially in our country, a sense of I shouldn't feel pain. I'm paying all this money for healthcare. I should get this surgery done. I should get this thing, and I shouldn't feel any pain. I just want to be able to get right back to work, right back onto my life. I don't want to have to go through the healing situation. And you also see this, because what we also do, the other side of it, is also mental health. So we see this also in chronic depression and anxiety, things like this, where people experience some severe grief, something that happened. They lost a job, they lost a partner, they experienced a death, they experienced a severe trauma or an accident. But instead of going through the grief and going through the processes, they instead want an escape. Or the physician will immediately say, do you know what you need? You need this, and then give this to them. And again, in that situation, then you're meddling with a person's physiology, with their neurophysiology, which in some cases it's appropriate, but in a lot of times it's not.
All right, just a couple seconds left here. I want to check on insurance coverage for some of the alternative things. For example, if somebody wanted to come to you and get some acupuncture done, will insurance cover that if it's part of an overall plan to get them off of opioids?
Yes, most private insurance will definitely do it. Oregon Health Plan will as well, as long as they have the diagnosis of certain types of mental health conditions or addiction, substance abuse.
Joshua Grainer is an acupuncturist and integrative medical director for Colpia Counseling Services in Ashland and Medford. He's also part of OPG, which we used to call the Opioid Prescribers Group. Now it's called Oregon Pain Guidance. Links available both on our website and on our Facebook page. Joshua, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank
Jefferson
you very much.
Exchange.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this segment. A short break here on The Exchange and then back with the Writer's Almanac. Please stay tuned.